You may be seated. Our next case is 12-1653, In Re Judicial Campaign Complaint Against Colleen Mary O'Toole. For the respondent.
Good morning and thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Murray, and I do represent Colleen O'Toole. I would like to request 3 minutes of my time to be reserved for rebuttal. Your Honors, until the matter currently before the court, Colleen O'Toole has had a distinguished career as both a lawyer and a judge, spanning more than two decades. In this case, however, she was found guilty on two charges under Rule 4.3A, but it's important to know that the finding of guilt was not predicated upon any claim that she actually made a knowing falsehood or a knowing lie, but rather under the part of the rule that was found by the panels below to violate the part of the rule that prohibits truthful but misleading statements that could be misleading or deceiving to a reasonable person. And it was based upon information on her website, for one charge, and on the second charge, for a badge that she wore. Now, we respectfully submit that the speech for which she was punished is constitutionally protected, and that the rule under which she was found guilty is itself unconstitutional under the First Amendment, based on the United States Supreme Court decisions in Republican Party versus White and in United States versus Alvarez. Now, in terms of the first charge upon which she was found guilty, the website, I think it is important to understand that everything that she said in her bio was true. The statements were true, they were factual, they were not false statements. It began with big lettering at the top that said Colleen Mary O'Toole for judge, and then it said Colleen O'Toole was elected to the Court of Appeals in 04, which was true. It then says during her term she has decided over 1,500 cases and has authored over 500 opinions, and that was a true statement.
But counsel, you just used the present tense over here. used the present tense. She has decided during her term. So would that be misleading? Would that maybe lead someone reading the website just to think that because the current tense was used, present tense was used, that she's currently a judge?
Well, I'm not sure has served as the actual present tense, but I understand your point. And that's what the panel found. They found that sentence would be misleading. But I think that's one of the problems with censorship, is that you have to be so precise in your grammar that if you make one grammatical error in the context of a two-page description of your bio, you can be punished.
Let's say for the moment that we would find that was misleading or could have misled a reasonable reader. What cases would you rely on to say that it still would be an unconstitutional limitation for us to punish a candidate for that?
Republican Party versus White and United States versus Alvarez, the two leading Supreme Court decisions on the subject.
And what part of those cases would you specifically rely on? What reasoning would you have us adopt?
Well, in Republican Party versus White, a landmark decision, the Supreme Court held that in those states like Ohio that have elections for judges, judicial candidates enjoy the full measure of First Amendment freedoms that any other candidate has, and that any canon that is content-based and restricts speech has to be subjected to strict scrutiny. That means it's presumptively invalid. In order to be sustained, it has to further a compelling governmental interest. It has to do so in a narrowly tailored way, and it has to be the least restrictive means to do so. And in that case, for example, they struck down the Minnesota canon that prohibited judges or candidates for judicial offices to announce their positions during their campaigns on issues that were going to come before the court. And the Supreme Court said there was no compelling interest in prohibiting that kind of speech. It wasn't narrowly tailored, and it didn't really further any interest in judicial integrity or judicial impartiality. Then you move to U.S. versus Alvarez, which is a decision only 2 years ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. And as you may recall, the Supreme Court struck down the Stolen Valor Act in a case in which Alvarez outright lied about having received the Congressional Medal of Honor. He also lied, by the way, about claiming that he had played for the Detroit Red Wings in hockey. But the case turned on the constitutionality of the Stolen Valor Act. And there the Supreme Court struck it down, even though Alvarez had made a knowing falsehood that violated the statute, and the Supreme Court held in that case that even falsehoods are protected by the First Amendment unless they come within some of the known exceptions to the First Amendment.
So you're saying that our rules currently as they exist would be unconstitutional based on White and Alvarez?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes.
In your view, would the entire rule have to be struck down?
Certainly 4.3a, which is the rule upon which we are, our punishment was predicated. Although it would probably be sufficient to strike down the part of the rule under which Colleen O'Toole was found guilty, which was the part that prohibited even true statements if they were potentially misleading or deceptive to a reasonable person.
So you're basically saying that the court cannot regulate candidates for judicial office. We cannot tell candidates that they may not use misleading statements that could potentially be deceptive. We can't regulate that. That's what you're saying.
That's what the Supreme Court of the United States has held, that the First Amendment in that context says the remedy for misleading speech is more speech. The ability of the citizens, particularly in this day and age of modern technology, the internet, the vast sources of information that are available to the members of the public at the click of a mouse to verify what a candidate has said and to determine whether the information that the candidate is disseminating is of value to that voter.
Now, Alvarez was not a judicial candidate, correct?
No.
So there is a distinction there.
But it's a distinction that actually works in our favor, and here's why. The Supreme Court has held over and over again that the highest protection, where the First Amendment is most protective, is in the case of political and campaign speech. Alvarez was convicted under a statute that prohibited a lower level of speech that doesn't enjoy the highest degree of protection under the First Amendment. So if there's any distinction between our case and Alvarez, the distinction is that in the case of political or campaign speech, the protection of the First Amendment is at its zenith, unlike Alvarez. And even in that lower level of First Amendment protection, the Supreme Court said that that falsehood, and again, we don't have knowing falsehoods here, so we're not dealing with that, but even...
Counsel, you agree that at the time that your client was not a judge?
Yes. That's correct, Your Honor.
She was not a judge. She was a defeated former judge. She wasn't a retired judge. She wasn't a visiting judge. She was not a judge.
That's correct. Okay. It's a factual matter.
And she testified, though, that she believed that she was a judge, just not a sitting judge.
Yes, but she also testified, Your Honor, that even though she regards herself to be a judge because people call her a judge and she thinks that once you're a judge, you carry that honorific title forever. And
that's
we're not here
wrong.
To debate
that's
that.
Clearly wrong.
Maybe so, but she was not charged with holding that belief. You're entitled to hold an erroneous belief. The question is, did she act on that belief? And she also testified that even though she does believe that she could call herself a judge, she did her best to comply with the Rule 4.3a to avoid calling herself a judge, and that she would always tell the people when she was talking to them that her term had ended and that she was no longer on the bench.
What was the badge that you referred to at the outset of your argument?
The badge, Your Honor, that's the second part.
What did that say?
It said, at the top, it said, Colleen Mary O'Toole. Underneath that, it said Judge 11th Appellate District, which was the office to which she was aspiring, and she usually wore that in tandem with a name tag saying O'Toole for Judge. Now,
let me ask you something. How often did she wear that, and where did she wear that?
Well, I think the record suggests that she wore it when frequently when she would be out in the public. I think the record is somewhat clear that she wore that often.
Okay. And
together with that lower
wasn't a member of the 11th District Court of Appeals at that time when she was.
No, her term had ended in 2011, and this campaign was in 2012. And
so would that be a representation to the public that she was a member of the court?
Not in her opinion, and I think at worst it's ambiguous. And I would direct your attention to a Sixth Circuit case, similar, Briggs versus Ohio Election Commission. There was a candidate who was running for state representative, and she put up a billboard, and it said Lou Briggs, and underneath that it said state representative, and underneath that it said strong new leadership. And there was a question as to whether she violated an Ohio election statute that's similar to this one, prohibited holding yourself out as holding a title that you don't currently hold. And there was a federal lawsuit over it, and the Sixth Circuit, in a reported opinion, said, at worst, that is ambiguous. Yes, somebody could say that that perhaps someone could conclude that the person actually holds the office of state representative, but it's ambiguous because it's also the office to which the candidate is aspiring.
But and wouldn't so, that, in order to really analogize that situation with this one, wouldn't the billboard have had to say representative and then the name? I mean, here we have judge and a name in a specific court. We have the name and we have judge in a specific court.
Yes, but also you had Lou, it's very similar. You had Lou Briggs, and then the line under that was state representative. Same thing. Colleen Mary O'Toole, Judge 11th Appellate District. He was running for state representative. She was running for Judge 11th Appellate District. The Sixth Circuit said that that was protected speech, and at worst it was ambiguous. But again, it goes back to the question of the constitutionality of the rule and the protected speech that is involved here and the ability of the citizens at the click of a mouse to discover and ascertain the truth.
Even if it's on a badge, I mean, I get on the website where you have a lot of information, you have a whole bio that you can read, you can flip through different pages, and maybe you can get an impression of this is somebody who used to be a judge, I'm not sure if this is somebody who used to be a judge, but when you're talking about a badge that has a name and it says judge, how is that ambiguous?
Because it was as she testified, if she had wanted to communicate that she was currently the judge, she would have said, Judge Mary Colleen O'Toole. The judge would have come before her name. That was her belief.
But she believed that she was a judge. So with that testimony, coupled with a badge that says exactly what she testified she believed, there's no other interpretation of the fact that she was believing and telling the people she was a judge.
But that's not what the record shows. The fact that she believed, it's the difference, Chief Justice O'Connor, between having a constitutional right to say something and whether it is right to say something. And what Colleen O'Toole said, yes, I read Alvarez and I read the O'Neill opinion and other cases, and yes, theoretically, I could call myself a judge if I wanted to, and I could consider myself a judge if I wanted to. But she goes on to say, but I don't do that because I try to follow the rule, and therefore I don't hold myself out as a judge. So,
are you saying there's a constitutional right to be misleading in the political arena? That's what the court, you're saying that's what the U.S. Supreme Court has said?
Yes.
That there's
yes.
a constitutional right, and that we as the Supreme Court have no ability to regulate judicial candidates and hold them to a higher standard because they are judicial candidates.
That's pretty much what Republican Party versus White said, that if you're going to have elections, in those states,
one justice that said that, correct?
The Republican Party versus White was the landmark decision.
Right. Was it Justice O'Connor or
actually, it was Justice Scalia who wrote that opinion. But it was I can't remember what the count was, but it was more than a majority that signed on to that opinion, and it was a landmark decision that says that yes, if a state is going to have elections for judges, and maybe we shouldn't. There are better ways to do it, many people think, and that's fine. But the Supreme Court said, look, if you're going to have elections, and if that's what a state chooses, then you have to live with the fact that the Constitution forbids judicial canons that are content-based that don't satisfy strict scrutiny.
So in judicial elections, candidates have the right, the constitutional right to be misleading, if we want to go as far as Alvarez, or the constitutional right to lie?
Technically, that's correct, but it would. But think
so
about how
it
stupid
your view,
it would
is
be.
It your view that a candidate, not necessarily your client, but any candidate could say on a badge, Judge O'Toole, and address a group when that person is not a sitting elected member of the court?
Theoretically, under Alvarez, yes, but it would be suicidal. Because think about it. The whole point of the First Amendment.
I'm not asking for a medical determination here. I want to find out what the legal argument is that you're making. So it'd be your position, your client could represent herself as Judge O'Toole, even though she wasn't Judge O'Toole.
Just as Alvin.
Because we're going to write law for all the candidates, whether people are on the bench today or challenging those incumbents on the bench, all of them can describe themselves as Judge O'Connor, or Judge O'Donnell, or Judge Preston, or Judge Fisher, and that would be just fine.
Wouldn't be fine, but it would be the result of Alvarez.
But it'd be constitutional in your view.
Well, if you read Alvarez, I don't know how we can come to any other conclusion, because if Alvarez's speech, lying in public about being awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, is protected.
But there's no canons or rules or regulations that would have precluded the activity. He was not running for judge. And judge in our society is a special public servant endowed with trust and legitimacy. And to say that this court or any court charged with the responsibility of regulating the judiciary and the practice of law can countenance that type of representation by one who aspires to be a member of the judiciary with basically hands tied in their ability to regulate is truly a distinction with the constitutional authorities I believe that you are putting forth here. These are not areas, the state representative, you know, Alvarez, totally different governmental interest at stake here.
Well, first of all, I'm not saying that I would think it would be a wise rule. And you don't have to go that far. Here we're only talking about whether or not the part of the rule that prohibits true but misleading speech can satisfy the First Amendment. I'm not here to advocate.
But is it true that your client was a judge of the court at the time she wore the badge?
No, she had
well,
been.
Well, then it's not true speech.
At worst, it was ambiguous. But it was ambiguous.
Pardon me,
she didn't say. She didn't outright say she was a judge. And the panels found
people addressed her as Judge O'Toole. She said, "No, I'm not Judge O'Toole." When she was out on the political circuit, "I'm not Judge O'Toole." Did she say that? There's nothing in the testimony that indicates that she corrected anybody who referred to her as judge.
Well, I don't think that that one has an obligation to correct everything that a third party says. I mean,
directly to you, or introducing you, or putting you forth to a group of people.
I've seen plenty of. I saw some minutes from a bar association meeting referring to judges who were on a committee who were not currently judges. In fact, my client's opponent was referred in the minutes in 2013 as Judge Mary Jane Trapp, even though she wasn't at that time currently holding the office. People, you can't be totally responsible for what third parties say. And I think
you are when you're in the campaign mode and you're in a room trying to garner votes from people and you're letting people continue the charade that you are a sitting judge.
Well, I don't think that's what the record shows. She testified that when she would talk with people, she would make it clear to them that she was no longer on the bench, and she would describe her years of service. That was her testimony. She didn't hold herself out to be the incumbent. And her website doesn't do that, and that badge, at worst, was ambiguous. But her testimony was she never intended to communicate the notion that she was an incumbent or that she was a sitting judge, and that she did, in good faith, attempt to comply with Rule 4.3A.
Contradicts with her actual testimony that I believed I was a judge, I just wasn't a sitting judge.
But
there's no such thing as a non-sitting judge that's been defeated.
But it's wrong to punish somebody for an erroneous belief that isn't acted upon.
Don't you think she should have been charged with knowledge there? That she should have known that she was not a judge? You're trying to say that because she believed it, even though it was wrong, that was okay.
No, but I'm saying that we can't punish somebody for an erroneous belief that is not acted upon.
It wasn't acted upon. You're saying that we can't couple her statement that I believed I was a judge, I just wasn't a sitting judge, with the fact that she's wearing a badge and allowing people to call her judge. That is something that cannot be connected.
I think that at worst, as both panels below found, the speech for which she was punished was potentially misleading to reasonable third parties. And that's a complete difference from a knowing, calculated falsehood or lie. And we're only talking about the part of the rule that says that even if your statement is true, or in the case of the badge, it would be ambiguous, but if it were deceiving or misleading to a reasonable person, one can be punished for that speech. That part of the rule clearly cannot survive the new technology and the recent Supreme Court decisions.
And then when your client says in her testimony, in the common person's mind, they think I'm still a judge, and return, reelect, running, most of them don't know the difference one way or another. She knew that in the course of her campaign conduct.
But she wasn't charged with that. Chief Justice O'Connor, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but we don't punish people for things for which they weren't charged. We have to limit ourselves to what were the charges, and the charges were two, and the website was all truthful and constitutionally protected. The badge was at worst ambiguous and constitutionally protected, and the part of the rule that was being enforced against her was the part of the rule that punishes misleading speech, even though the remedy for even misleading speech is more speech. And when you think about the election of 2012, and I know you want to say that judicial candidates are different, and to a certain extent they are, but the Supreme Court says if we elect them, they aren't different in the constitutional sense.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
You've used more than
your
time.
Oh, yes, I apologize. Thank you.
Ms. Sabella.
Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm Mary Sabella and I represent James Davis, who is the complainant in this matter. With respect to the constitutional issue, the state must show compelling state interests. I would posit to you that there are, in fact, compelling state interests. The first compelling state interest is the integrity of the judiciary. Is the judiciary held to be fair and accurate? And that interest applies to campaigns as well as the judiciary as a whole. The state also has a compelling state interest in protection of the public from lawyers who engage in fraud, dishonesty, deceit, and misrepresentation. And the state has a compelling state interest in protecting the public from lawyers who make statements with respect to judicial officers or judicial candidates that are either knowingly false or with reckless disregard to the falsity of the statements.
Ms. Sabella, how do you answer the comments that Republican Party versus White, that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, has stated that judicial elections are to be treated as any other election, which seems to demolish the arguments you make about compelling state interest?
Well, Your Honor, I read White differently. White held that a candidate's views or opinions with respect to issues could not be regulated, that it was an unconstitutional regulation of the speech, views, and opinions on issues.
So to say,
I think rape is a terrible crime, or I think those are views on issues.
Are you saying the other language that has been quoted was just dicta?
No, what I'm saying is that what occurred in the O'Toole case, that her statements were false, that these weren't her views or opinions on issues. This was a false statement that she was a sitting judge. Under White, it's not protected.
Okay, did the board find it was false, or did they find it was misleading?
I believe the term that they used was misrepresentation.
Okay, which is
and
not
I
quite...
would indicate that a misrepresentation is a falsity. And therefore, it comes under the knowingly false or with reckless disregard to its falsity. And Ms. O'Toole did state a number of times on the record, I am a judge. She stated that on cross-examination on page 54. She stated it in response to Commissioner Sink's questions on page 255 of the transcript. She maintained all along, I am a judge, I am just not a sitting judge. With respect to wearing the badge and not correcting, there is testimony in the record with respect to the Tea Party event and Mr. Apicella's record that he did not hear Ms. O'Toole correct anyone when she was introduced as Judge O'Toole. He did not hear her say she was not a sitting judge. And I would posit to you that that is false testimony, that her claiming that she was a judge is false, and therefore it fits within the compelling state interest. And with respect to Alvarez, I would distinguish Alvarez as well. In the Alvarez case, it was a criminal statute, and Mr. Alvarez was criminally prosecuted. And the way I read Alvarez, the reason the court struck down the Stolen Valor Act is that it would have restricted speech at any time, anywhere, any place, including if Mr. Alvarez was sitting in his home speaking to a friend and said, I won the Medal of Honor, that it criminalized that speech. And that's different than saying, I am a judge, or holding oneself out that she is a judge when in fact she does not hold that office. So I would make that distinction.
Counsel, I'm just not remembering anymore.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I'm not remembering anymore. I'm looking at the case involving Justice O'Neill, which was a precursor for this. What did he do? When I look at the opinion in which they found our rule probably violates the U.S. Constitution. What was it specifically? I don't see that articulated.
Okay. In the O'Neill case,
yeah,
he was charged with a violation of 4.3C. So that's a distinction from this case in that Ms. O'Toole was charged with violating 4.3A. And the 13-judge panel, even though they held that 4.3C was unconstitutional as applied to the specific facts in O'Neill, and I believe the rationale for the distinction was that, Justice O'Neill at the time was retired from the bench and eligible to be appointed as an assigned judge. And by virtue of the fact that he was eligible.
But he called himself a judge, just like Judge O'Toole.
He used that term in some of his campaign materials, and I believe that the at least as I read the 13-judge opinion, their position
was legitimately permitted
to say he was judge because
this is not quite a distinction without a difference. The difference is she was defeated and he retired or did not run again.
Correct. He legitimately retired and was permitted to be assigned.
But wasn't he practicing law at the time?
No.
All right. So?
I believe he was a nurse.
All right. So it was all right for him to call himself a judge. right?
Well, the 13-judge panel said, as applied to him, it was permissible for him to do. I didn't perceive that they
I don't
held
really
it
remember, and I haven't talked to him about
that.
I don't remember, and I hadn't talked to him about it, but I'm looking at the opinion, and they clearly discuss White and Alvarez and conclude our rules run amok.
Well, 4.3C as applied to him and the facts of his case, and I draw that distinction as opposed to saying the rule as a whole cannot be enforced.
All right.
And that's the distinction
I'm
that I would draw.
I'm just trying to get context here.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. There were two other issues raised in the objections. The other issue was with respect to the sanctions and that they were too harsh, and that in fact they were the result of passion and prejudice. I disagree with that. I would indicate that when you read the transcript as a whole, you will see that there was a continuing pattern of saying, I am a judge, when in fact she was not, and that testimony coupled with the actual use of the badge and everything that occurred demonstrated the falsity, and that's what led to the panel's decision. With respect to
counsel, would you concentrate on the compelling state interest, the integrity of the judiciary?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your rationale for why this is why the decision was correct.
Why the decision in the O'Toole case was correct? Okay. Well, the integrity of the judiciary means the public must respect the court, they must respect the legal system, and as lawyers, we are prohibited from engaging fraud, dishonesty, deceit, misrepresentation. As lawyers, we are prohibited from making knowingly false statements or statements with reckless disregard with respect to judges or judicial officers, and I would posit that those compelling state interests don't dissolve because someone files a petition to become a candidate. That in order to protect the public and for the public to respect the court and to believe that courts, in fact, are fair and that they are accurate and that the courts speak the truth, that judicial candidates must be upholding those types of tenets that the judiciary espouse. And, you know, even if, quite frankly, you determine that the
So if one is not a judge, never been a judge, and runs for a judicial office and says things that aren't true about the opponent, that should be regulated under the Judicial Conduct Code or under the Attorney Code. Let's say that person is unsuccessful. So they were a lawyer, and they are a lawyer when it's over. They never were a judge, maybe never going to be a judge.
Under 4.3A of the Code of Judicial Conduct, and I'll use an example. I've never been a judge. I've never sat on any bench, appointed or otherwise.
But once
if I were to run a judicial campaign and say, Mary Sabella, judge, Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Court, I would posit to you that is a violation of 4.3A because it's a falsity and I'm holding myself out. And I would suggest that I should know the rules, and therefore that would be a violation of 4.3A and I could be held liable under the campaign. I would also indicate that if for some reason that was not brought up by anyone during a campaign, by virtue of the fact that I hold a law license, I'm also bound by the rules of professional conduct, and I could be brought up on charges way. So it could happen either way.
Once you file a petition, are you automatically under the Code of Judicial Conduct?
You're under the Code of Judicial Conduct, but by virtue of the fact that you hold a law license, you never
No, that's what I'm asking.
You don't get to violate the rules of professional conduct because you're a judicial candidate. Maybe I'm not understanding your question.
My question is, are our rules on the Code of Judicial Conduct, do they specifically encompass one who files as a candidate?
Yes, Your Honor.
But never?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's clear and undeniable?
Yes. Yeah. The clear language of 4.3A.
Okay.
And?
I had one other question. That is yes. The $2,500 attorney fee. Mr. Murray has suggested that that's an inappropriate penalty because it was never contemplated that the attorney fees be paid by anyone other than the TARP campaign.
Okay. Well, first of all, if in this court's judicial campaign conduct opinions, they in fact have been awards of attorney's fees when the complainant has in fact proven the rule violations. So when you say it wasn't contemplated, I'm not quite sure in what context that arises.
That's just what I read in his brief.
Okay. The law is there.
It happened
in cases before, and in fact, in the Purdue case, they upped it from $2,500 to $6,000. So there's prior precedent from the court that an award of attorney's fees to the complainant is something that is permissible to do. And, you know, quite frankly, the way the system is set up, judicial campaign conduct cases are the only cases in the discipline system where the complainant has to bear the costs of prosecuting the case.
Are you seeking $2,500 in attorney fees at the moment?
Well, in a perfect world, Your Honor, I would ask for what I'd asked for in the brief, which was at least the $1,372.50, which is what I had in prior to the time spent briefing. I will take whatever.
So you're asking for the $13,000?
Yes. And for the court's edification, as of Monday, my fees were up to $20,891.25 because of the preparation. And it's taken me a little bit longer to prepare for this argument only because the briefs were filed in January of 2013. So I had a year gap between filing of the brief and doing the argument. So I had to go back and redo some of the work that I had done before. So, and I would posit that the payment of the attorney's fees is not onerous, it's not inappropriate. The sanctions have been awarded before, and I think that is something that's within the court's discretion to do. And I see my time is almost up, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, your time is up. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. There are two. When you look at the two prior panel opinions, both of them rely on the reasonable person would be deceived or misled part of Rule 4.3A. In the O'Neill opinion, seven other times in the same brochure, respondent identifies himself as Judge O'Neill. Although it is arguable that respondent's brochure may mislead an observer, we find a doctrine against misleading is even a greater threat to free speech. And finally, in the opinion in the Republican Party versus White, Justice Scalia rejects the dissent's argument that there's a difference between judicial and legislative elections. And he says this complete separation of the judiciary from the enterprise of representative government might have some truth in those countries where judges neither make law themselves nor set aside the laws enacted by the legislature. It is not a true picture of the American system. Not only do state court judges possess the power to make common law, but they have the immense power to shape the state's constitution as well, which is precisely why the election of state judges became popular. It's the same standard, both for legislative and judicial.
Do you disagree that White was a case that was dealing with issues and the ability for a candidate to take a position on an issue?
It struck down the announce clause, but they point out that the qualifications of candidates, they say, are including that. is at the core of the First Amendment. So it doesn't matter that yes, that was...
That was the crux of it, and the way judges in Ohio deal with that is to say, if they're so inclined, I believe this on this particular topic, whether it be abortion or you know, use of marijuana or whatever the topic is, this is my personal belief, but the law is such, and I am bound to follow the law. And that perfectly comports with what the White decision is with regards to the ability to have speech. The judge, distinguishes from what we're talking about here in applying the White decision to this particular set of circumstances. White was not an unabridged, permissive opinion that says that you can mislead.
I respectfully disagree. If you read the whole opinion, Republican Party versus White, it's impossible to conclude that my client's speech could constitutionally be punished here because of its misleading nature. And the whole point of the First Amendment is that it's the people who are the truth squad, and it's the voters, and not the state paternalistically protecting the voters from information. The voters decide what information is of value and what information is true, not the state.
Thank you. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn court?
Aye. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.